You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
Stress is one of the most underrated poisons, that we have in the world. And we just tend to not only ignore it, but we tend to like pile more of it on top and almost see that as a measure of success. The more stressed we are, the less time we have for self-care. It's kind of like, well, I'm doing really well. And it's just so the opposite.
But before all of that...
This episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Aldi Mamiya.
One of my favourite things about being a parent is when clever people come up with genius solutions to problems we have.
Oh my goodness, me too. Like, can we please give a dame or a knighthood to whoever invented those little syringes for kids' medicine? It makes it so much easier to look after poorly little ones.
They also make great water squirters in the bath, don't you know? But I digress. A big problem many parents have is leaky nappies. So to solve this, Aldi's award-winning nappies now have dedicated boy and girl pee zones.
Pee zones? Tell me more, Wendy.
Well, did you know that girls tend to pee more in the middle of their nappy, while boys usually pee more to the front? Aldi Mamiya nappies now have uniquely designed pee zones to draw liquid across the entire core of the nappy to enhance absorption. Clever, huh?
Oh my goodness, love that. I'm also a big fan of the leak lock pockets to help contain poo blowouts and the 360 degrees leakage protection.
And the nappies are really comfy and a flexible fit.
They are. Plus, they're dermatologically tested and suitable for newborns.
Brilliant. They've thought of everything.
Get your Aldi Mamiya nappies in store now.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the NetMums podcast. How are you doing, Alison?
I'm doing all right, Wendy. So we're recording this, aren't we? End of July, and the kids are about to break up, or maybe they already have for some of us. But yeah, by the time that this goes out, it will be September, and things will have got back into a routine and a rhythm, and quite frankly, I'm jealous of future Alison and future Wendy because things will seem a bit easier then, won't they?
It's such a weird time, isn't it? Because on the one hand, I'm really looking forward to the summer with the kids and doing some fun stuff. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, I can't do my day job in a week when they're at school. How am I going to do my day job in a week when they're not at school? And the maths doesn't work. Nobody gets, unless you're a teacher, and hats off to teachers, yeah. You don't get enough holiday to make it work. I don't know how we're going to do it, Alison.
I know. Let's strap ourselves in for the summer. I think we'll be grand. We'll be okay.
Well, let's ask our guest, because I'm guessing that she's also strapping in for the summer.
I think she probably is. This week, we are joined by fitness expert, author and mum of four, Shakira Akabusi. She's the founder of Strong Like Mum, with a book of the same name and now an app and a YouTube channel. You might also have seen Shakira on Lorraine and This Morning. She's basically on a mission to help parents feel strong in both body and mind. Shakira, a warm welcome to the NetMums podcast.
Good morning. It's funny hearing your intro because you're like, she's on a mission to help people feel strong. And I'm like, oh, we've got the summer holidays coming up. What happens then? What happens then? Oh, I know. I've got four and my eldest is 10. And I'm like, at what age does the babysitting stuff kick in? Because I'm like, can we use this yet? The 10-year-old.
This is it. I've got a 14-year-old and I'm thinking that maybe when she's 15, maybe I'll start using her to babysit. But it's just dependent on the child, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, my daughter's 13 and the trouble is she's not very nice to her sister.
Exactly.
So she's perfectly capable of babysitting her, but I know she'd be really mean to her, so I can't leave her in charge.
That's it. The 10-year-old is the absolute wind-up merchant. So I'm thinking, okay, no, I've got to wait for the second one. I think he's got the right temperament.
So how are you? Because you moved house, didn't you, recently? Yeah. Is it still utter chaos or are you all settled in?
It's utter chaos. We've got utter chaos going on. So I don't know if people are listening to this or watching it, but complete chaos. We've got boxes absolutely everywhere. But yeah, it's good. I mean, we've got a lot more space in this house than we had before. So we can sort of like put all the boxes into, the rooms that we didn't have before. So yeah, it's good. It's really exciting to be in. It feels like a big step.
That's great. Now, you posted online about how tricky it was to manage your kids' emotions during the move.
Yeah.
How did you manage that? Have you got any tips?
Yeah, it was really tricky. And we, I mean, I've got children, four children of really different ages. So their needs are really different as well. You know, the 10-year-old, and then I've got seven, and then the twins who are five today, actually, were four at the time. And managing their different emotions. And then they had roller coasters. Half they were excited because they get their own room here. So they're excited about having their own bedroom. But they were sad about leaving the street. And, you know, I think sometimes as adults we can still feel it as well. But they really felt like the energy of the house we were in, almost like the house had feelings. And so my middle son in particular, he was like, but I love this house. I want this house to know that we love it. And, you know, all of that. So in the end, I actually bought them some photo frames. And we went round the old house, the garden and everywhere, and we picked flowers, or we even got little bits of the brick from the outside of the house and put them in the frame, all of that kind of thing. And then they each have their frame in their room. And I said to them, you know, and I basically tried to explain it in the way that, look, with humans, we live in like small groups that we call families. You know, some insects live in colonies of hundreds or thousands. And I was like, houses, like the house pattern is that they have different families come in. They want, that's how houses live. And, you know, I said to them, it's time for this house now to move on. It's given us so much. We've given it our energy and now it needs new energy. That's what houses do. So a little bit, I guess, of a hippie explanation, but
it worked. Such a great way to explain
it. Yeah, it worked and they were happier.
So I really wanted to ask you about the pressure that mums feel to bounce back. I hate the words bounce back after having a baby. What do you think is the biggest kind of misconception about postnatal bodies that you want to tell the mums listening and the dads listening and everyone about postnatal mums?
Yes. OK, so the first thing, the thing that really springs to mind first is that for some reason we seem to have, like, you know, shrunk down the value of the postpartum body to a number on a scale. And I think that's when suddenly you feel the pressure and you know, it feels really stressful and, oh, I bounce back and I'm not back to what I was, all of that kind of stuff. Because for some reason, that's the way we decide to value how healthy or fit or strong our body is. Whereas if you, I think because I'm in the world of women's health and I understand the detailed science of what the body does. I mean, I am absolutely in awe of the female body. The, you know, creating, carrying, birthing life, nurturing life afterwards, the way that it will heal after birth. It's so fascinating to me that I'm like, the utter respect that we need for the female body, and that number on the scale is so irrelevant when you look at it like that. And if we can, like, if everybody, that's not to say you can't have aesthetic goals, you can, but really we need to always have that foundation of respect for what our body has gone through and what it does. And that is like the baseline thing that I would love to change, is that we have this respect and awe for what the female body goes through. That would kind of be number one. And then I think in terms of bounce back, again, I'm much more interested in longevity health. And that word longevity, we're hearing more and more. So that message is starting to get through. But it's, you know, health and fitness, that industry has suddenly become really hand in hand with like 8-week ab blast or get your bikini body, these kind of like clickbait headlines of we can do this for you really quick and everything has to be quick. And actually for longevity health, it takes a long time of like laying down foundations. And I even find it tricky now. I'm 5 years postpartum. My twins are five today. And I posted the other day about a deadlift PB that I did in the gym. It's like the heaviest I've ever deadlifted. But I really wanted to be clear, like, this is 5 years in the making. This is not 5 weeks or 5 months in the making. It's 5 years in the making. And I don't want that message to get lost because of what I'm now doing to the journey that has, you know, taken me 5 years.
So you've had four babies now, including your twins. 5 years ago today, you were having your twins. I mean, July 2020, having twins in lockdown, that's a whole other podcast, right?
Yeah.
What's your experience of recovery different after each baby or set of babies?
Absolutely. 100%. So different. And I would say the first pregnancy and birth, I think in terms of the actual logistics of the birth process was fairly straightforward. And
I had positive experiences the whole time, but, you know, the recovery was more straightforward. And then with the second one, I felt like it took me slightly longer. And then the twins was a cesarean section. And I, even though I had worked with pre and postnatal women for years at that point, living that postnatal recovery after a cesarean was a really eye-opening, and I think I'd really underestimated.
It's intense, it is. Isn't
and,
it?
And it is, it's on like really... an emotional and a physical level. And I remember, saying to my husband, this is the first time ever I felt disconnected from my body. And I said to him, I feel like an alien in my own skin, because I couldn't, or simple things like lifting my leg to put my pants on, I couldn't do it. And I was like, it just felt so strange to me not to be able to move in the way that I was used to. So that was a longer recovery, I think.
I think just talking about cesareans, it's partly that thing of, it's for many women, it's the first time you felt really weak in your own body, unable to kind of, I felt weak. And the one thing you don't want to feel when you're also trying to look after a new human, or in your case, two new humans, is weak, right? And but you can't do anything to feel strong because you are recovering.
Yeah.
And it takes so long.
Yeah, I think it does take longer. I think, again, sometimes it just comes down to perception or mindset. Although initially in that postpartum period, I did, like I said, I felt like, I mean, you used the word weak. It wasn't necessarily weak, but I felt really disconnected. And, but what I think is so special about the postpartum period is that for many women, this is the first time that we've really paid attention to our core. So it actually gives us an opportunity to lay down strong foundations. So many people don't think about their pelvic floor. And then once they've had a child, if they experience, I don't know, prolapse or diastasis recti or incontinence, whatever it is that they're experiencing, they suddenly think, oh my gosh, I need to take care of my pelvic floor. And it actually gives us an amazing opportunity to build strength from the foundations up. So yes, you can feel, you know, whether you use the word weak or disconnected or it feels different, or yes, all those things can be true, but it actually means we have this chance to put things right on the base level. The tricky stuff comes when you don't do that. And women don't do anything for their pelvic floor. And they're like, well, this is just the way that it is now. I'm just going to wet myself when I go for a run. Well, and then 10 years down the line or 5 years down the line, that's when we might have back pain, knee pain, sciatica, you know, all these different types of things that can occur. So it is, I guess, about that mindset of really, like I said, respecting what the body's gone through and giving women the tools to be able to rehabilitate that themselves, because that's, I guess, that's one of the biggest issues. We don't have the resources or, you know, available for everybody to get that rehabilitation advice.
So seeing as you've started talking about pelvic floors, let's keep talking about pelvic floors. Why do you think we're still so awkward talking about that stuff, even though all of us at some point or another are dealing with
it? Yeah. I think a huge part of it is that for a long time, nobody has wanted to commit to giving the advice because it is so different for each woman. So it is really difficult to give general advice, because when you look at the pelvic floor, for example, if people are like, oh, well, you know, I wet myself when I go for a run. On one hand, it could be, OK, well, your pelvic floor is weak, so what you need to do is Kegel exercises or pelvic floor strength exercise. But it could also be that it's actually nothing to do with your pelvic floor and it's to do with your posture. And you're doing, you know, you're doing all the Kegels and your pelvic floor is strong, but your posture is out of sync. Well, in that case, we need to do different exercises to rehabilitate the posture. Or it could be that you've overtrained your pelvic floor and it's too strong. So, you know, it's difficult to give that general advice, but one of the positives of social media, and especially if it is expert advice that you're following, because we all know there's difficult things in social media, but you can now provide sort of like consistent support, whether it's, you know, via an app or a YouTube or it's social media, whatever it is, where you can provide that expert advice and keep targeting different topics, and hopefully you'll reach a few people that need the right thing. We also haven't had the research for a long time. You know, at the risk of just shouting off a million statistics, women's health is so underfunded. And when you then trickle down to actually, you know, pre and postnatal research or perimenopause research, it's, you know, under 1% of science, sports science research goes into those areas of health. So It is a combination of not having had the advice, not having had the experts. When I first, one of the reasons I became a pre and postnatal expert specialist is because I read an article that said only 5.5% of fitness industry professionals were qualified in pre and postnatal. And I'm like, how? Like, that's a huge failing on women from the fitness industry. Why have we got all these people talking about, I don't know, you know, how to deadlift, whatever, but we're not actually helping women on that base level when many women will be pre or postnatal. So hopefully the tide is changing. There are some fantastic experts out there now, and just, you know, keep giving them a platform to be able to share that information.
I've seen you say before, Shakira, that stress and emotion can actually affect pelvic floor, you know, health.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about that? Because that sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, my gosh, stress is one of the most underrated poisons, you know, that we have in the world. And we just tend to not only ignore it, but we tend to like pile more of it on top and almost see that as a measure of success. The more stressed we are, the less time we have for self-care. It's kind of like, well, I'm doing really well. And it's just so the opposite. When it comes to stress on the pelvic floor, gosh, I could talk for ages. I mean, okay, the two, if I just pick two, for example, when it comes specifically to a cesarean section, so not so much the pelvic floor, but for a cesarean section, we now have research that's showing us that emotional stress can trigger scar tissue regrowth. So if you have had any abdominal surgery, cesarean, you know, whatever it is that you've had, it can trigger that scar tissue that is healing as the incision site begins to heal to spread. And then it sticks to other internal organs and it can bind things. It can reduce your mobility, you know, all of that type of stuff. So huge for women who have had, or anyone who has had abdominal surgery, or in fact, any surgery, shoulder surgery, knee surgery, whatever, emotional stress and its impact on scar tissue. So that's one way. In terms of the pelvic floor, yeah. So when we're stressed, there's so many things that happen with our hormones, but even just from a physiological perspective. So if we are stressed and we clench our jaw, or we're constantly, you know, playing with our hands or curling our hands into fists or curling our toes, this natural stress response, we clench and tighten the pelvic floor. Alongside that, the pelvic floor is actually connected right from our jaw down to the bottom of our feet. So all of that has an impact. And just when we're stressed, our natural human instinct is to tense up and hold everything in. And so if the pelvic floor is constantly in partial tension, it can't release. And if you can't release the pelvic floor, you can't activate the pelvic floor properly. So you end up with this sort of midway point where women can experience leaking. So if you're noticing not just leaking when running, if you notice that you struggle to hold urine, so when you do need the loo, then you notice drip, 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 because that would indicate an overly or partially tight pelvic floor. If you have pain inserting a tampon, pain during intercourse, all of that, lower backache, that could indicate that you've got sort of this constant tension in the pelvic floor, which can be triggered by stress. And that's just two small examples of, you know, something to talk about for a long time.
So what's your take on the celebrities who kind of are posting those flat tummy selfies a couple of weeks after they've given birth? Is it doing more harm than good?
Yeah, I think it does. I don't think it helps. I think that so many things come into it. You know, gosh, there might be some women out there who can have a baby and 2 weeks later, you know, feel like their uterus has returned to normal. And I don't know, you know, and they feel like they suddenly look great and they're posting it everywhere.
God, I was still wearing adult nappies after 2 weeks.
I was as well. My sister's just had a baby, actually, and she's 4 weeks postpartum. She's like, what is this? Why is it still going on? I'm like, yeah, it just does. But, you know, so yes, but I don't want to villainize women for celebrating. You know, I also think we need to be there to celebrate women, and great. If you feel confident in doing that, then fantastic. But it's not the only message. I don't know if it's just the world that I surround myself in, but I think we're seeing more and more celebrities or people of influence showing the realities, because this is what people now want. So hopefully that's falling by the wayside a little bit, and we're getting that message out there about, you know, the norm. But everyone's norm is different. So I think more important is probably whatever someone is posting, understanding that their journey is not your journey. I have people message me a lot saying, oh, how do I get to look like you? How do I get to do that? And I'm like, well, you just wouldn't. I won't look like you. You won't look like me. You know, different things. But everyone's going to be so different, have their own journey. So I wouldn't want to villainize everyone, but no, I don't think it helps. I think sharing the reality and the struggles, and look, if your struggle is not that, there'll be other struggles that they have. We all have, you know, different things going on. In my first pregnancy, where I had a pretty straightforward recovery, I had severe mental health, postpartum anxiety, OCD, that, you know, destroyed so many elements of my life at the time. And looking at me, people have been like, oh, well, everything's fine because she's wearing a bikini 5 months later. So it's just, you know.
Yeah. So how has fitness supported your mental health, especially in those early parenting years?
Yeah, gosh, huge. So huge. And that's really why I love it so much, because still now, it, you know, we're talking about the summer holidays and how are we going to survive, or, and moving my body is huge for me. In those early days, I had postnatal anxiety after my, during my first pregnancy, actually, and then after the birth of my first son. And it was extreme. I won't talk too much about it, but just as an example, it would take me about 4 hours to get to bed each night because my OCD was tapping and counting. So I had numbers in my head. Everything had to be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 sets of 5, 5 fives of 5. It was like everything. Took me, I left work and it would take me 3.5 hours to get home from work. So not even to get home, 3.5 hours to do a 7-minute walk to the tube station, and then I had to go. It was so extreme.
Oh God, must be exhausting.
It was exhausting. And basically, very long story short, I ended up doing hypnotherapy. And I think if you have something like anxiety or high stress, the rate of the thoughts in your head, it's so frequent. It was all the time, you know, this constant talk of anxiety in my head. And I did a session of hypnotherapy, and I found that it just slowed the rates of the thought enough that I could begin to try to distinguish between, well, which of these thoughts is my instinct and which of my thoughts is anxiety? Because I felt like, as a mum, so often they say to you, trust your instincts. But if you've got anxiety, it's really difficult to tell if this is my instinct that's making me feel alert and worried, or if it's anxiety. But that hypnotherapy allowed me to slow it down enough to be able to tell the difference. And then exercise gave me the same thing. If I was really, really stressed, if I could go out for a 20-minute jog, I would just, it would, you know, the hormones, the positive hormones would kick in, and it would just allow me to change my perspective ever so slightly to be able to distinguish, is this anxiety, is this instinct? And slowly but surely that process got easier. You know, it would take me a long time, and now I can do it pretty quick.
I'm delving back into my memory, Shakira, and I'm trying to think, am I right in thinking that you really suffered during your pregnancies with your mental health? Was it hyperemesis gravidarum, or was it...
Sorry, I thought you were still speaking about anxiety. But yeah, oh, I felt so ill. Now, I never actually vomited. I just had this nausea. Like, it was... And I remember someone saying to my husband, well, maybe she just shouldn't have children if she can't, because I could not get out of bed. I could not get out of bed, and it happened every time. So I had another child, you know, the second time I already had a child. And then when I had the twins, I had 2 children. I could not get out of bed. Without my family and my friends, my kids would not have got to school. I don't know how they would have eaten anything. I was in bed pretty much. I'd crawl to the toilet. It was just awful. It was just awful. I remember, like, plates piled high next to my bedside table of, like, any little thing that my husband thought I could eat. And it would just get, the dirty dish would pile. And I was like, I can't. I couldn't wash dishes. It was absolutely awful. It was awful.
That's a physical condition, but that must have had an impact on your mental health as well at the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It felt... I remember when we spoke, it was with your book, Alison, and we had a conversation. I remember saying to you, there was a time when I said to my husband, and I was never suicidal. And actually, the reason I didn't get support on the NHS, because I did go to see their perinatal mental health team and filled out a form. And they said, well, because you have ticked here that you're not suicidal, you don't qualify for any more support on the NHS. But we can refer you to XYZ. But I remember saying to my husband, it would be easier to jump out of the window than have to do what I'm doing. It would just be so much easier, because it was that bad. It was that bad. It was just, and it was, you get quite depressed because it's so isolating, and time
stretches on. I mean, my gosh, the concept of like an hour would feel like 10 weeks. It was just, and I just remember thinking, I can't see the end in sight. It was just sickness forever. But then it did get better. You know, I don't want to terrify.
I was similarly ill, and I remember measuring time in CBeebies episodes. So I knew that, and I still now, if I hear the theme tune to certain CBeebies from kind of 9 years ago, I still feel sick because it's kind of like hardwired. So I would get through, okay, if I can get through Abney and Teal,
then I know
that. And then, okay, right. And it, because time does bend and meld, and you just have to get through it in kind of 20 minute increments.
Remember that. Yeah, exactly. There's still things. I was watching the Great British Pottery Throwdown or something, and it was just, I would always like play the episodes in the back just to have talking. And now if I have to watch the Great British Pottery Throwdown, I'm like, no, it's a no.
For me, it's Abney and Teal and Neutrogena grapefruit face wash. No. They're the two things that I will never be able to endure ever again.
Oh, Wendy. Yeah. Just a reminder that this episode of the Net Mums podcast is brought to you by Aldi Mamiya.
As well as award-winning nappies with P-zones that enhance absorption, we love Mamiya wipes.
Plastic-free and gentle enough to use on your little one from birth. They make nappy changes so much easier.
Head to your nearest Aldi store to check out the entire Mamiya range.
Now, Shakira, you've spoken before about movement as medicine.
Yeah.
How it's about so much more than exercise. What do you think that means in practice, especially for mums that are juggling kids in chaos?
Yeah, well, I think firstly, you know, from an emotional perspective or a mental health perspective, as we just spoke about this, you know, on a very real hormone level, there are things that happen, but also chemically, like sometimes it's really difficult. I think one of the parts of really sort of sustaining exercise is understanding your body a lot. And I did go on a journey of like self-discovery. I know, it's, again, it sounds like a hippie notion, but sometimes when my body is tired, it needs rest. Sometimes when I'm tired, I actually need movement. That movement creates energy in the body. So if you are tired with your children, and you know, sometimes getting up early and doing a bit of exercise actually gives me energy for the day. And there is a subtle difference. So, you know, I'm not saying never rest. Sometimes rest is the answer, but sometimes movement is the answer. And then, you know, again, exercise helps us with not only our mental well-being, but it will help us with our immune system. It creates a really healthy immune system response. It will help us with our digestive process, you know, so it can help our digestion and our nutrition intake. There's just so many. I think nowadays exercise has become extracurricular, and nothing really in the system supports people exercising. Whether you are a working parent, you don't get lunch breaks or, you know, anymore to go for a walk or anything. And we don't have, you know, of course, we know the childcare system in this country needs some attention. So it's like extracurricular, whereas actually movement is a human instinct. The human body was built to move. If you go back to original Homo sapiens, exercise wasn't something they did as a hobby. It was like they had to do it to survive. So our body wants to move. And when we deny our body an instinct, it has a stress response and it's unhealthy. So again, you know, creating that support network around you that encourages you to keep moving. And it doesn't have to be going to the gym or doing a HIIT class or going for a 10-mile run or a cycle. There's so many ways. You could go dancing. You could, you know, just going for a walk, really great form of exercise for your joints, for your muscles, for your heart, you know. So it doesn't have to be one way of exercise. But it will seriously impact our health, and actually I think impact our children. One of the things I'm very grateful to my parents for is that I've always enjoyed exercise. And that's why, you know, when I say it's not extracurricular, for me, I've always enjoyed it, and it's just been a part of my day to day. And I know for so many people that isn't the case. It is like, oh, I've got to do some exercise, you know. So it's being able to to have it as part of your day and doing something that you enjoy.
Now, obviously, as you mentioned, you followed in your famous dad's footsteps. Your mum, is she a fitness trainer as well?
Yes. Yeah, so my mum, she now does. So my mum was a personal trainer, almost like a physio, a bit more than a personal trainer. She would work with athletes or individuals. And now she specialises in 50 plus and she does GP referrals. So again, like a physio, if someone has a hip replacement or a knee replacement, then the GP would refer them to someone like my mum, who would then help them rehabilitate their injuries.
So obviously, yeah, as you said, growing up with that around has really inspired you. Do you think that any of your kids will follow in your footsteps and their grandparents' footsteps?
I don't know. All of my kids, again, they love being outside and being active, which to me, that's like mission accomplished. They don't need to be an athlete or go into sports, you know, do whatever they love doing. But yeah, my middle son loves gymnastics. My eldest is obsessed with football. I am, sorry, I say don't push them into anything. I'm trying to push my daughter into jiu-jitsu because I do jiu-jitsu, which is new. And it's so much fun because it's so hard. I've never done anything like that before. So it's a real, real challenge. And I just think, oh, I'd really, she's five. And I'm like, if I could start you now, by the time you're 15, you can take on your brothers. Kira, help again.
Now, obviously, you've mentioned you've got four kids, you've got a business, and now you've got a new app. Tell us more about the app. Is it specifically for new mums, or can any of us download it and use it?
Yeah, anyone. Oh, gosh. I think the thing with pre and postnatal is it sounds like, you know, that immediate postnatal period. But I have worked with women who are 15, 20, 30 years postpartum. But because they didn't do the work in that postpartum period, we go back and we have to train from that point. The app also has peri and postmenopause specific workouts in it. My mum features on the app, so she does some 50 plus stuff. So there's a whole, it's, you know, women's health across the board. I also am, over the last 5 years, became qualified in peri and postmenopause movement. So that is all a part of the package. There's also like a really interesting sort of cross now between, because women are having children so much later, we have women who are having children in their 40s, mid to late 40s, and we're seeing this like perimenopause hormone and postnatal hormone crossover, which is really interesting. So working with, you know, that specialist group. So that's all on the app. And the YouTube it will be an extension of that. So there's going to be a ton of workouts on the YouTube platform, which is launching in September, when I know this episode is coming out. So pre and postnatal, you know, from deep core specific to building strength to peri and postmenopause, that will all be on the YouTube. And then on the app, we will have specific courses that you won't be able to get on YouTube. So I have a pelvic floor rehabilitation course. There'll be an introduction to weightlifting course, strength training. All of that will be specific to the app.
So finally, for anyone who's listening, who's feeling a bit stuck or a bit low, what tiny step could they take today to help them feel better, mentally and physically?
A big question, because it really depends on where you are, you know, in the journey. I think what I would say is that the answer is that whatever it is that you're struggling with, you know, for example, I met a woman who had an issue with her, ever since she gave birth, her toe was her baby toe became stressed, separated out from it. And she couldn't figure out like what was the connection. But now we understand that our feet can be connected to the pelvic floor and all the way up to the jaw. There's a whole chain of deep body tissue, and that you know, symptom that she's experiencing can be placed anywhere along that line. So it could be, you know, a cesarean section, it could be pelvic floor issues, could be a lower back thing, and it's her posture and there's a nerve being compressed. There could be so many things. So, you know, before she was like, well, I just don't know what to do. There is an answer out there. It's about, you know, finding that expert information, keep asking for the answers. It can feel so overwhelming. And I think that one of the biggest shames at the moment is that women still have to fight for their answers. We are not supported enough that people see you struggling, or, you know, medical professionals see you struggling. They're like, we know what you need. You have to really push to be seen, push to be heard, go back again, go back again, go back again. So
should someone go to their GP as the first? So if someone is listening to this and thinking, oh, I wonder if, you know, I've got a lower back issue, or I've got, you know, something that I think might be connected to my pelvic floor, is going to the GP and asking for a referral the best first step?
Oh, I'd love to say yes, but it depends on your GP. And so often GPs will not know. You know, they are general practitioners. They don't really know. So it could be you might be better off going to a women's health physio. If you can't afford it off the NHS, then the first step is the GP. And you might have to push and push and push to be referred. And it might take you 4 or 5 months, but they should be able to refer you then to a women's health physio. So it could be GP, it could be women's health physio, it could be someone like me who specialises in pre and postnatal or perimenopause or pelvic floor dysfunction. It could be like that. If you are looking online for your advice, which so many people do, you just have to make sure that it's a credible source. So make sure you're checking people's qualifications. You know, don't just go to a celebrity who's had a baby. That's not necessarily the answer. So all of those things. I think in general, no movement is worse than movement. Unless your GP has specifically said to you, like, bed rest, you have got whatever, you know, medical condition that you really have to have, sort of a strict thing. Movement will always be better than no movement. So you can go for a walk is a great place to start. Just being up on your feet and walking is great. You know, doing some light body weight exercises to begin building strength. The power, and again, this message is starting to get out there, which is good, but the power of muscle mass, like, you cannot underestimate how important it is to your digestive system, your metabolism. You know, we now know that we used to have this myth that our metabolism slows down after 35. The metabolism does not change. It stays relatively stable between 20 and 60. And actually, but what does change, because our muscle mass decreases and our muscle is what digests calories, that's not the technical term, but it what metabolizes, you know, we burn more calories, the more lean muscle mass we have, that can impact your metabolism or your metabolic rate. So making sure that we're laying down that muscle mass, that's how we're going to have healthy bones. All of that is how we have more energy. It all happens in muscle mass. So really important, simple strength training. And again, for some reason, the fitness industry, we seem to think there are like people who are into fitness and people who aren't into fitness. And, you know, you have the gym girls and you have the girls who don't do the gym. And it's just so not the case. This is for everyone, always. And slowly taking those steps. If you don't want to go to a gym, you don't feel comfortable there, you can do it at home. You can do it, you know, with YouTube. As I said, make sure it's a credible place, but you can do it on YouTube. It doesn't need to cost you anything, you know. So, yeah, I think just keep pushing for your answers. Don't settle for being in pain, being uncomfortable, you know, experiencing incontinence. You are worth more than that.
Well, I think that's all so interesting, and I could talk to you about this for hours, Shakira, but we will let you go and get on with your day. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been brilliant to chat to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Netmoms and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.